Today on the 21st, it's Christmas Eve, and in the spirit of the holiday, we're revisiting some of our favorite interviews from this season, including a conversation with two Illinois-based film critics about Christmas movies, contemporary and classic.
Look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Then, how the pandemic is affecting charities in Illinois. This year, the Salvation Army is expecting to take a big hit on its annual Christmas Red Kettle campaign. And finally, an inside look at how classic Christmas performances are being adapted for online audiences, from the Nutcracker to the Symphony. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on the 21st, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, and WNIJ in DeKalb. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Today is Christmas Eve, and in the spirit of the season, we're revisiting some of our favorite interviews from the holidays. Later in the program, we'll hear about how Illinois charities are doing during the pandemic, particularly in this holiday season when they collect a lot of money, typically. And we'll talk to two performing arts organizations, the Springfield Ballet Company and the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra, about how they are adapting their usual live, in-person, classic Christmas performances for virtual audiences. That's coming up later in the program. But first, Christmas movies. There are lots and lots of Christmas movies, new and old. This year alone, the Hallmark Network has 23 new Christmas movies, and Netflix, Hulu, and other streaming services have also gotten in the game. I recently spoke with two Illinois-based film critics to help sift through the choices and talk about a few classic Christmas films. Reggie Ponder is also known as The Real Critic, and he's a resident film critic for Vocalo 90.7 FM in Chicago and a member of the African American Film Critics Association. We were joined by Clint Worthington, film critic for Consequence of Sound and editor-in-chief of The Spool. Here now is that conversation. Reggie, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me. Really excited.
Clint, welcome back to you as well.
Glad to be back.
Let's first begin with some of the new Christmas movies this season. Reggie, you mentioned Hallmark has 23 movies, including The Christmas House, which has an LGBTQ storyline. What can you tell us about that film?
Well, what I can tell you is less about the film because I haven't seen that one. But what I can tell you is that it is kind of not a flip-flop, but a really interesting development for Hallmark. Because if you remember last year, they had a big kerfuffle about having a film where two gay people kissed. So a lot of their viewers were like, that's not the real thing that we want to see on Hallmark.
But it wasn't even one of their movies. It was just like an ad on the Hallmark channel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it was to see that they have a movie that has an LGBTQ plus storyline is really important. And then talking about these 23 movies, I have to tell you, Brian, that firstly, they started on like October the 24th. That is too early for me. That's too early. I can't get into Christmas until after Thanksgiving, but they started and they have new movies coming out consistently through the 20th of this month. And I've watched a few of them because the people in my household are really into Christmas. So again, not as much about that particular film, but it's kudos to Hallmark for not really caving into what I want to say, bigotry.
Yeah, I want
to
also
I feel like the solution to that ahead. Particular problem is to build a Thanksgiving movie season. So to go in between October and December.
Thank you, Clint. See, that's why you have Clint on. That is the absolute solution. Let's do some Thanksgiving family movies instead of Christmas. It's just too early.
You know, it's I always felt that way about the department store Christmas displays, but because I'm not going anywhere this year, really, I haven't really seen as much of that. I do want to ask, as long as we're on this subject of LGBT movies, we had Mary Holland earlier this week, who's on the show, who is a co-writer. She went to Northern Illinois University, which is her Illinois connection, but she's a co-writer of The Happiest Season, or maybe it's just Happiest Season, which is about a lesbian couple celebrating Christmas. And sort of dodging one of the members of the couple is not out to her family, and of course they get stuck there for the holidays. I'm curious if either of you saw that film, what you thought of it.
Yeah, I've seen it. I do like it. It's a very charming, especially like I don't think it's her first feature, but Clea DuVall directed it and I think co-wrote it with Mary Holland. It's relatively charming. It's got a great cast: Kristen Stewart and Aubrey Plaza and Mackenzie Davis and everybody. It does tread. It's one of those things where, you know, speaking to the inroads of LGBTQ representation on screen, especially as a queer person, like seeing the ways it's infiltrating mainstream stuff. You know, because we have a lot of queer cinema that is a lot about struggle and strife and pain and anguish, and so it is on the whole refreshing to see just a charming Christmas movie that happens to be about a queer couple, even if it weaves in those interesting stressors of being closeted, especially in a conservative family, and the stresses that happens with a dynamic in a relationship where one person is not out yet. And those kinds of things, you know, I know people on both sides of the discussion who either like or don't like the way the premise comes out. But I think that is, even just showing it on screen is really, really important.
Yeah, I agree with you, Clint. The first point is representation. And the fact that you can find an LGBTQ+ a film on Hallmark, Lifetime, Hulu, and Netflix this year is great. I mean, that is just so fantastic. So for people who are looking for that, but I think the greater point that Clint makes here is that even in mainstream movies, you will see a LGBTQ+ person in that film. And sometimes their story is more than just they're in the film, which I think Hollywood is getting a lot smarter about. And it's just so great to see from a representation perspective.
Let me ask you, speaking of a representation perspective, Reggie, Jingle Jangle and Christmas Hotel, two films driven largely by African-American casts. Tatiana Ali is in one of these. Forest Whitaker, Keegan-Michael Key is in the other. Can you tell us a little bit briefly about these films?
Yes, I think so. First, with Jingle Jangle, for me, it is an instant holiday classic. The story is about Academy Award winner Forest Whitaker plays the best toy maker in the world. He gets his invention stolen by Keegan-Michael Key, and now he is down and out, and he has to find his magic again. And his granddaughter helps him to find that magic. This looks magical on the big screen, and I had to go to the biggest TV screen I could find in this house to watch it, because the colors, the costuming, the animation, the story, the representation, the singing, it all absolutely works for me. And in fact, we've seen it a couple of times in my family, so it is a instant family classic. You mentioned another movie, and I'm sorry, I forgot which one that was.
Christmas Hotel.
Oh, yes. Yes. Christmas Hotel. It's in there with the regular, it's regular fare, but it's cute. And someone said that maybe we were judging these movies on a pandemic curve these years, saying, hey, this one, but not for the Christmas movies, because they usually always come out on these streaming services, you know, Hallmark and Lifetime. So it works. It's a fun movie. There's a little love interest, so I'm happy about that. I'm like, will he get a kiss? Will he get a kiss? Will he get together? And you know they're going to get together. So I hate to spoil it. So from a representation perspective, there are a number of films also from an African-American perspective out there. And to me, Jingle Jangle is a must-see, and I hope people will watch it, not thinking that it's, because it's all African-American, that it's not a universal story.
Yeah, okay. I'll piggyback on what Reggie's saying. Go ahead. I love Jingle Jangle. I think it's really, really charming. And the songs, it's a new musical that actually has good songs, which I feel like is increasingly rare. And yeah, everyone's really charming. The costumes are brilliant. Yeah, go see it.
Okay, I want to reintroduce my guests. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Clint Worthington, who's a film critic for Consequence of Sound and editor-in-chief of The Spool. Also, Reggie Ponder, known as The Real Critic and resident film critic for Vocalo at 91.1 FM in Chicago. Am I saying that right? Vocalo, Vocalo? I've heard it both ways, Reggie. I don't know what
you're saying it right. Vocalo.
All right. So Vocalo. All right.
You can go and check us out on Vocalo, or you can go to 91.1 FM.
If you're in the Chicago area, yeah. I did have a clip. We're going to skip. I have a clip from KFC, A Recipe for Seduction, which is Mario Lopez. This is like an extended commercial for KFC, basically a 16-minute short film. We're going to skip that. People can seek it out on their own. I do want to play a listener voicemail let's talk about some favorite Christmas movies here. This is from Richard in Champaign.
Hi, yeah, this is Rich from Champaign. I have a Christmas story. It's sentimentality mixed in with humor. And then my other favorite is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. It incorporates all of the family Christmas cliches along with Chevy Chase's physical slapstick humor. Thanks a lot.
Going for a new amateur recreational saucer sled land speed record, Clark W. Griswold Jr.
Remember, don't try this at home, kids. I am a professional.
Later, dudes. Let her rip, hang pen.
Okay, the scene there from Christmas Vacation. Thank you, Rich, for that voicemail. You know, I got to be honest with you guys. This is a movie I was fairly young when it came out. I loved it as a young person through college. It is not aged as well on me. You go back and you actually read some of the contemporary reviews. Ebert, I think, might have given it 1 star when it first came out in the late 80s. What is Christmas Vacation a classic for either of you guys?
It's not it's not one of those that I'm looking forward to seeing. I like your comment about it hasn't aged well. I think I liked it better then to now. It's I could take it or leave it. If it's on, we have watched it, but this is not one that I seek out during the Christmas season.
Yeah, I don't either. It's one of those things where it's fine, but I almost feel like that and A Christmas Story, at least for me, were so overexposed to me in my youth that like somehow it feels like I don't need to watch it again for some reason. I feel like it's already in my brain enough that I don't need to like really go back to it.
Yeah, it's one of those things kind of like Bill Murray, if you guys remember in Groundhog Day, where he's answering all the Jeopardy questions before they're asked. That's how I feel watching Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, kind of.
I can say all the lines as they're coming up. All right, Reggie, I want to play a clip. You mentioned a classic in our pre-show emails about this segment. Let's listen to a clip from this. People should recognize it pretty immediately.
Harry!
The fool flew all the way up here in a blizzard.
Harry, how about your banquet in New York?
Oh, I left right in the middle of it as soon as I got Mary's telegram. Good idea, Ernie. A toast to my big brother George, the richest man in town.
Oh, Reggie, why do you like this movie so much?
So this one is really, this is my favorite movie, period. And I think because what they did with this film was to show how everyone's life matters. And I think what happens sometimes when your favorite movies are not only because these movies are great, it's when you watch them, who you watched them with, what was the circumstance. And I watched this with my family and it told me, I have 10 brothers and sisters, it told me that I mattered. I mattered to the rest of the family, to the other people that I touched. And I think that they did such a great job. The acting is good. It stands the test of time. It is a fantastic movie. And I have the DVD. I have all the copies so I can watch it however I need to watch this. I think this is a must-see movie.
All right. And Clint, I've got a clip queued up for you, too. This is from the infamous Star Wars Holiday Special.
This is one life they won't soon forget. Wait,
I lost control of the remote cannons.
I'm gonna have to run back and operate the aft gun manually. Stay on things here. Why do I always think that taking you home for life day is gonna be easy?
Of course, I hope our listeners will be keeping physical distance on Life Day this year, not going home if, you know, the virus is still raging in that part of the country. Clint, why is the Star Wars holiday special important to you?
That might be the question that plagues me for the rest of my life. But I don't know. I just have a strange, I mean, I've always been a Star Wars fan, and it's one of those things where the holiday special is not really like, it's not really compatible with being a Star Wars fan, but it is compatible with being a fan of strange TV curios that shouldn't really exist. And it was something that aired once on television in the 70s, about a year or two after Star Wars came out, before they knew it was going to be this gargantuan franchise, and they didn't know what to do with it. So like old school 70s comedy writers like Bruce Valanche hopped up on whatever substances they were doing in the 70s, created this hour and a half variety show in the Star Wars universe with people like Bea Arthur as the cantina bartender and Art Carney as like a smuggler. And it's the messiest, most bizarrely fascinating thing I've ever seen, where you get like an animated segment with the first appearance of Boba Fett. You get the opening 20 minutes is just this unsubtitled Wookiee sitcom. Diane Carroll cameos in this strange like VR thing that one of the Wookiees watches. It's bizarre. It's so strange, but yet the fact that it's so bad makes it a so bad it's good kind of thing. There is this strange, infectious, odd energy to it that I can't look away from.
And I think say it ain't that, so, Clint. Say it I ain't
know,
so.
I know. But the fact that even just this year, Disney Plus made a Lego Star Wars holiday special has meant that like in this Disney-fied version of the Star Wars franchise, they are reclaiming it, I think, to a certain extent. So in light of like having watched it and reviewed the Lego version earlier this year, I went back to the holiday special and I'm like, man, I can't stop thinking about it. Love it or hate it, I can't stop thinking about the Star Wars holiday special. And it's available for free. Like, you can find it on YouTube somewhere.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank my guests. They've been Clint Worthington, film critic for Consequence of Sound, editor-in-chief at The Spool, and Reggie Ponder, known as The Real Critic. You can find his reviews online at his Twitter, which is The Real Critic. That's R-E-E-L. And he's resident film critic also for Vocalo, 91.1 FM in Chicago. Reggie, Clint, this has been great. Thanks so much for being
with
me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us on.
Coming up after the break, we'll continue revisiting some of our conversations from this holiday season. Next up, how Illinois charities have been affected by the pandemic, and performing arts organizations adapting classic in-person performances for virtual audiences. This is The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. All this week, we're re-airing some of our favorite conversations from this year, and with today being Christmas Eve, we're specifically revisiting some of our favorite holiday interviews. Earlier this month, we heard about how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting charities across Illinois. Here now is that conversation. For many of us, the sound of ringing bells in front of stores reminds us not only of the approaching holiday season, but that this is meant to be a time of giving. Even in a pandemic, the bells are ringing, but the Salvation Army's Red Kettle campaign is facing new challenges this year. The organization says it's bracing for a 50% drop in kettle donations. Meanwhile, the pandemic has left millions of Americans struggling, and charities continue trying to help those in their communities who are most in need. Joining us to talk more about this is Randall Summit. He's the executive director of the Champaign County Salvation Army. Randall, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the invite.
Also with us is Rob Dahlhaus III, executive director of See You at Home, which offers services and resources to people experiencing homelessness. They call them friends without an address. Rob, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Randall, I want to begin with you. Can you talk about the history of the Red Kettle campaign and how important that is to the Salvation Army's fundraising in general and holiday fundraising in particular?
Well, thank you so much. That's an excellent question. Again, the Red Kettle started well over 100 years ago, way out on the West Coast, where someone just decided that they had to do something to get people's attention. So they basically grabbed a kettle, an old-fashioned black kettle, and had it at the docks in San Francisco and would catch people as they came off the ship. And the phrase used to be, keep the pot boiling, because it was talking about our soup kitchens and those type of things. And then over the years, it's just grown and grown and grown. Here in Champaign, the Red Kettle campaign has been going on for about 120 years now. And it is one of the, if not the major fundraisers that we have during the calendar year. So it is very, very important to us. And the funds from that go directly here into services in Champaign County. So it's very, very important.
How does the number of people you have volunteer, because I imagine it's volunteers out there who are ringing the bells in front of many stores and shopping centers. Is it the same number of volunteers this season, or has that been a challenge finding people to do that?
Volunteers are always a challenge to get. And again, in front of the stores, it is a combination. Kettles is also kind of a job training program for several people who are not able to find employment in other ways. So several of our workers are getting paid to be there because, again, if they did not, they'd have nothing else this year. And so, again, we're paying them just like right at minimum wage, just a little over that. And they come and they help us with that. But volunteers this year, of course, because of the pandemic, have been very concerned. And so we've put a whole bunch of different things in place, hand sanitizer, social distancing from the kettle, making sure everyone has masks, making sure everybody has gloves, making sure the kettles are sanitized before and after every shift, and just a whole bunch of things because we want to make people feel comfortable with being able to make their donation that will still help people. So it has been a challenge and several people have been concerned. We've lost a lot of the seniors that would have normally volunteered because they're just too risky for them. So our volunteer numbers are down. Last time I checked, which would have been later this morning, we still have about 4,000 hours of volunteer opportunities available between now and Christmas Eve. So we're still lots of time and lots of help that is needed.
You know, it's remarkable to think about, you know, nickels, dimes, quarters adding up. How much money does that typically bring in just from the kettles?
For the last few years, we've averaged right around from just the Red Kettle section of the campaign, whether it's the large kettles where you'll see those bell ringers, or if you go into like a gas station or one of those type places, you'll see a small one, a mini kettle on the countertop. Between all those different Red Kettles, we usually generate about $170,000 to $180,000 here in Champaign County. This year, because of COVID, I did reduce our budget some, which apparently was a wise thing for me to do. I reduced our goal this year to $158,000. Currently, as of Saturday, which is the latest numbers we have back from the bank, we're running about $8,000 behind last year. So we'll see what we actually end up with at Christmas. Champagne's never let us down, so I'm not real worried about it, but there is concern.
Yeah. Rob, I want to bring you into the conversation now. See You at Home will be hosting its annual One Winter Night in a couple of months, I believe. This is where participants commit to spending a night, 12 hours, outside in a cardboard refrigerator box. Can you tell us about this event?
Sure. It's the 10th anniversary, actually, of our event. One Winter Night serves as a massive community awareness event, but also as the major fundraiser for See You at Home, as our funding is community funding here in around the Champaign-Urbana area, private donations and those types of things. And so this event historically has brought in anywhere between 50% and 66% of our annual budget. And like you said, our participants commit to spending 12 hours outside in a cardboard box to get just a little snapshot of what our friends on the street have to deal with on a nightly basis. We select the first Friday in February. That's very intentional for us because, you know, we want folks to experience that cold, that lonely feeling that you get, you know, at 2 or 3 in the morning, even when you're surrounded by a lot of people. So, you know, we understand it's not exactly what our friends deal with, but it is it's a pretty close simulation of what they have to endure. So we encourage folks to participate with us. We have had to change the event just a little bit for our 10th anniversary.
I was going to ask about that, if there are any sort of pandemic changes coming to the event and if you're expecting maybe fewer people or donations this year because of that.
Sure. So we have had to change it up a little bit. We are still planning to have the boxes in downtown Champaign, whether that is on the streets or sidewalks or whether that's in parking lots in downtown area on private properties. We are taking setting up for that. We are trying to space things out quite a bit more, putting distance between folks, providing everybody a mask, as Randall said, just trying to have hand sanitizer and all those types of things available, making sure that our key leaders are aware of what to be on the lookout for, and showing folks, where to be and what they need to be doing. We've had to spend a little time figuring that out. Our fundraising goal this year is actually higher than it was last year, because earlier this year, we expanded our men's and women's emergency shelter services from just winter to full year round operation. So that increased our annual budget by about $300,000, just like that. So we did increase our fundraising goal as we try to sustain that resource, as well as all the other resources we provide, including transitional housing, 24-hour street outreach, a daytime drop-in center, work program, and others.
Sure. So, yeah. Let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are revisiting a conversation we had earlier this month about how the pandemic is affecting charities. I spoke with Rob Dahlhaus III, who is executive director of See You at Home, a group that offers services and resources to people experiencing homelessness. I also spoke with Randall Summit, executive director of Champaign County Salvation Army. I just want to reemphasize, this was a conversation that originally took place earlier this month, so you can't call in now. We did take calls during that segment. Let's go now to one of those callers. We have a call from Margaret in Rockford. Thanks for calling in.
Hello.
What's your question?
Recently, it was a very rainy day, cold, rainy day, and there was a gentleman outside of a building collecting with a kettle. And I was so disappointed to see him subjected to standing outside when there was a perfectly long entryway that he could have stood in the dry. And I asked him, I said, why aren't you standing inside? And he said, we're not allowed to. That really bothered me. That somebody's out there doing the best they can in order to help the Salvation Army do their collections. I said, well, is this the company that's not allowing you to go inside? He said, no, I don't think so. I don't think it's the company at all. And so that really bothered me, that these people are doing what they can do to help, and yet nobody seems to care that they're out there getting soaking wet.
All right, Margaret, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Were you able to drop a couple of coins in, or is that something you like to do every year?
Well, I do more than that, but... coins are okay, that's
sure.
Fine, but usually it's a little more than that. But I also give to multiple different charities, but fortunately, they're not standing outside in the cold. I just mail
right.
it to them.
Okay.
But when you have someone that's volunteering to stand for several hours outside in the wet and the cold, it bothers me that nobody's caring about them.
All right, Margaret, thank you so much for the call. Randall Summit, I know Margaret was calling from Rockford. You're the Champaign County Salvation Army, so I want to ask you to answer for that particular circumstance, but maybe you can just talk again a little bit about some of the rules and policies you have in place for the bell ringers.
Absolutely, right. And Margaret, thank you so much for calling in. We do appreciate that. And please know that we do care. There are national policies that we are subject to based on each of the storefronts that we stand in. We advise here in Champaign anyway, and I'm sure they do in Rockford as well, for our workers to get as close to the building and under any kind of overhang they can find. None of the companies that we work with allow us to be inside. Matter of fact, several of them have very specific rules against being inside, even in just like the entryway area. Because again, they're afraid that either the noise level from the bell or that the worker will block the flow of traffic to the store. And again, they're wanting to do their best to help us out, and we are very thankful to that. And so we try to accommodate as much as we can, but we also do think of the workers as well when they're out there, because it can be very miserable. Ringing bells, as we tell people, is one of the easiest yet hardest jobs you'll ever do. Because again, it is difficult to stand there in the cold weather and the rain. And then at night, once the money does finally come in, then we have to go through the whole process of drying that money because the bank won't accept it if it's wet. So it's a lot of work. So we would prefer that they were not in the rain, absolutely. But sometimes there's just no way around that. So we tried to make accommodations for our workers, our volunteers, to take several breaks so they're out of that, to find some kind of overhang if possible. And again, just do the best that they can. But yeah, if they're not standing inside, which is the case in the vast majority of our locations, it is because of a national agreement we have with those corporate offices.
Okay. Rob, I want to ask you, what is the biggest need you're seeing in this pandemic year specifically? Homelessness is unfortunately been a problem for a long time, but what is different about the circumstances this year?
That's a really good question. I don't know if you can pinpoint one specific thing. I mean, I think we're seeing in our community the need for resources for, as it relates to voucher programs, being able to work with apartment complexes and making sure there are affordable options for folks. We deal mostly with what we call the most vulnerable. So folks that are coming through the emergency shelters, those that don't have sustainable income and the abilities to pay a monthly rent or a mortgage, when we encounter them. It's interesting when you look at the numbers that we've seen, from October 31st of 19 through October 31st of 2020, we had over 760 different men and women coming through the emergency shelters, some staying for a couple of days, some staying for months at a time. And so you look at a number like that and you ask yourself, okay, well, what is the next step for that person? What are they going to do after they're with us? And so again, it's a matter of, I think, a lot of different factors. It's working with landlords and apartment complexes and seeing what options are available for folks, seeing if those apartment owners are willing to kind of take a chance on some of our folks, because many of them do have evictions and misdemeanors and those types of things in their backgrounds. I also think it's important to have those type of voucher programs available so that there can be some reduced rent for those folks. I do think there is value in having to pay something because it does add value to what you have. But I think just one of the encouraging things is I've seen just a general awareness in our community and in my experience of people viewing homelessness as a year-round issue. I think a lot of times we just see it as a winter problem, a winter issue, but the pandemic has really put it front and center in a lot of people's minds and shown them ways that they can get more involved to support those in need. And so I would say that's one of the biggest things that I've seen, just the general awareness that's coming around. And that is encouraging. I mean, trying to find a silver lining, but
it's difficult to comply with a state government stay-at-home order when you don't have a home to stay in. It really does highlight that point you were making. Randall, what about you? Biggest need the Salvation Army is seeing this year?
Food. We deal with a lot of food issues where people are trying to find nutrition, trying to find things for their family. Our numbers have never gone down, and we've never closed our doors through all of the pandemic, even stayed home because we were licensed as essentials. So we kept our pantry open. And as people found out we were open, the numbers just grew exponentially. Most days we serve anywhere from 50 to 60 families a day through our pantry just here in Champaign. So food is one of the biggest issues we're dealing with. Luckily, we've had some great partnerships with some of the utility companies that are out there that we administer funds for, American Water, Ameren. They've really stepped up to help people who are finding it difficult to pay those bills during the pandemic, especially those who've lost their jobs. So the biggest issue we're dealing with is food. And of course, right now we're in Christmas, and there's been a very difficult time this year. We have a great partnership with Toys for Tots and Cesar Perez, who covers that area for us, and just being able to find places where people can drop off toys. Because again, so many businesses have closed or are not available, or folks are just afraid to, because of the pandemic, to do that. So we're looking at quite a drop in the number of toys we received so far this year. We're hoping for big things. Tomorrow's our big drive, but we're hoping for that. But those two, toys and food, are the biggest concerns we have, because the numbers are definitely up.
We're going to leave the conversation there. That was Rob Dahlhaus III, Executive Director of See You at Home, which is a group that offers services and resources to people experiencing homelessness. We also spoke with Randall Summit, Executive Director of the Champaign County Salvation Army. Again, that conversation happened earlier this month. Coming up after the break, how the pandemic is affecting arts organizations this holiday season. We'll hear from the director of the Springfield Ballet Company, as well as the conductor of the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra. This is The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Christmas Eve, and so we're re-airing some of our favorite holiday conversations from this year. Like most of the 2020 holidays, the festivities at Christmas will be different because of the pandemic. We've just heard an excerpt from the Ellington Strayhorn reimagining of the Nutcracker Suite, part of the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra's Joy, a reimagined holiday concert. As the pandemic rolls on into the holiday season, performing arts organizations have had to find creative ways to bring their art to their audiences. While the holiday season is typically a time for mainstay live performances like A Christmas Carol and The Nutcracker, this year, arts organizations are adapting Christmas classics for digital audiences. I spoke about that with Stylian Kirov, music director of the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra, and Julie Ratz, the artistic director of the Springfield Ballet Company. Here now is that conversation. Hello, Stylian. Welcome to The 21st.
Hi, great to be here. Thank you so much.
Hello, Julie. A long time no talk. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Brian, my old friend. It's so nice to be on your show. I'm honored.
I should add, I have a connection, as you can hear, with both guests today, although Stylian might not realize it. I've known Julie for more than a decade from when I've covered the Springfield Ballet as arts and entertainment editor at the State Journal Register. And some number of years before that, I was actually stage manager for the Illinois Philharmonic, although that was before Maestro Kirov's tenure. Stylian, I'm going to start with you. The Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra has reimagined its 2020 December offering. It's called Joy, a reimagined holiday concert. Can you talk about the process of going this direction, how it came together under these very special circumstances that are 2020?
Of course, yes. And it has definitely been challenging, but we also saw this as an opportunity to, in a way, reinvent ourselves and have these type of concerts. So the way we came with the idea with the holiday concert is that basically we couldn't have the whole orchestra perform on stage for each concert because of the safety guidelines. And so our first concert in October was only strings. We have also recorded, and we will broadcast in January, a concert for woodwinds, mostly woodwinds. And this brass percussion holiday concert came to life with the idea that when you think of Christmas, we want to have something very celebratory, something very exciting. And with this in mind, we have this holiday program that includes two very, very beautiful arrangements by John Mindemann. And also a really fun take on the Nutcracker, Duke Ellington's Nutcracker. So it's a bit of a jazzy Nutcracker that I'm sure the audiences will enjoy.
Yeah, and I love that Duke Ellington, Billy Strayhorn, Nutcracker Suite. Can you talk about performing that? I would imagine you've had your baton over the original Tchaikovsky at some point, or certainly you're familiar with the piece, and how it differs from a performance standpoint.
Well, for sure. Of course, we are missing the audiences, but we are very happy to be able to perform together. I have conducted the complete Nutcracker Ballet many, many times. I want to say maybe over 10, 15 times. I know some musicians have played it for over 300 to 1,000 times. Yeah. And
it is one of the most frequently performed pieces in the repertoire because of the Nutcracker, right? Every year.
Exactly. All over the country. Yeah. And you never get tired of it. But after performing the Duke Ellington, which has very beautifully incorporated the original score and very organically transformed it for a jazz band score, I think my image of the Nutcracker will never be the same after performing this. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, my first experience of the Ellington Nutcracker was with a dance company that performed a ballet to it. And just to give you a taste of the sort of sly humor in musically, but also even in the titles, the dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy is now Sugar Rum Cherry, I think.
Cherry, yes,
if I have
exactly.
that right. Yeah, so, and then I also wanted to ask before I bring Julie into the conversation here. You mentioned it's a strictly brass and percussion performance. And I had wondered if that was for safety, if somehow brass instruments were safer than woodwinds, but you're saying you're just separating the orchestra into different concerts to keep, it's a numbers game, I guess.
Exactly. Yes, it's right. Well, there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, there are certain regulations about the venue and how many musicians we can have in the hall at the same time. And then secondly, we are also, yes, the brass and the winds, they have to take extra percussions, which is complicated, but the musicians were wonderful in doing these. So they have to wear special masks where you can insert the instrument. And then when you don't play, actually your face is covered. And also in terms of breaks, we have to take break approximately every 50 minutes. So that the aerosols settle and the air settles in the hall. And yes, the holiday concert is brass and percussion mostly, but there is also one bass, there is a piano as well. So it's a mixed orchestra, but the reason for the separation is exactly the numbers.
Okay. And I'll have information about later in the program about where people can stream that if they want to see it. Julie Ratz, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Every year, the Springfield Ballet Company produces a performance of the Nutcracker, but with the pandemic this year, that isn't possible. You've been involved with the Nutcracker almost your entire life, right? Can you talk about that
That's
connection?
Right. Yeah, well, we've been doing the Nutcracker here in Springfield for 45 years. And I started as a dancer in the Nutcracker when I was 8. So every year for 45 years, I've done a Nutcracker, and this will be the first year since I was 8 years old that I haven't done one in 45 years. So it's a little bit different, but we're doing some, I feel like we still have a little bit of Nutcracker. We are going to do, just like Maestro Kirov was speaking about the limitations on orchestras, we're going to be performing with strings from the Illinois Symphony Orchestra this weekend at a car dealership, because you're able to open the bay doors and have a big space to perform. And we got special permission to do this performance of some of the Nutcracker variations with live music. So it's kind of fun to have something different to do. We recorded the snow scene for a documentary that we produced this year. So we were able to let all the dancers in the company learn some Nutcracker choreography and have a role. And so, you know, we've just been trying to do what we can in these crazy times. But, you know, I feel like I still have my taste of Nutcracker. So,
yeah, a car dealership.
Okay.
That has got to be a first, performing the Nutcracker at a car dealership.
Right. I'm writing this idea down. I really like it.
Can you, well, tell me about that. Tell me about, you mentioned the documentary. This is Through Clara's Eyes, it's called. Clara,
yes.
Of course, is the young girl who gets the Nutcracker as a gift. Can you talk about how that came about and what viewers might expect if they want to check that out?
It came about as a board meeting in my backyard in the summer. And we thought, well, how are we going to do this? You know, like, who's going to want to see the Nutcracker of Springfield Ballet when you can watch American Ballet Theatre's Nutcracker for free, you know? So we needed to do something different. So we decided to do a documentary on our Nutcracker, because, you know, everybody's Nutcracker is a little bit different. And our Nutcracker is called, well, our Nutcracker takes place, our Nutcracker documentary, excuse me, is called Through Clara's Eyes, because it was too big of a task to just you know, conquer all of our 45 years of Nutcracker. So we narrowed it down to Clara, and most of the, all of the Claras in our Nutcrackers have been local dancers. So we were able to go back and interview some of our former Claras and talk about how dancing this role has impacted their lives, you know, like what it meant to their personal development, what it meant to their artistic development, what being a part of our Nutcracker meant to them. So it's a little bit of a narrower focus on our Nutcracker as seen through the eyes of the dancers who dance the lead role.
And if I'm not mistaken, you are among the former Claras, right?
I am not.
You're
am
not. Not. Oh, forgive me.
No.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and that's,
I knew you were involved. Sorry. That's probably.
No, it's funny you say that because the documentary filmmakers that we hired said that they learned not to ask people that question.
Yes.
Because not very many people get to dance this role. And so when you go in the community and you say, I was in the Nutcracker, you know, you don't want to ask them if they were Clara because it's a very specific role. You know, you have to be just at the right stage of your artistic and emotional and social development to dance this role. So there's a lot that goes into it, and it's only for very few people.
How has the
That's
pandemic
okay.
affected the performers at the Springfield Ballet, right? So they get to do this car dealership performance that some of them get to be in this documentary in the snow scene you mentioned, but I've got to imagine this is a challenging year for young dancers, not being able to perform. Are they even able to rehearse at all? How does that work?
Yeah, well, most of our dancers are teenagers, you know, so they're facing all kinds of challenges in their lives with school and dancing. But we were able to start back in the studio in June when some of the mitigations changed. And so we've worn masks the entire time. We've followed all of the regulations. We haven't had any dancers get sick. So we've been very fortunate that way. But then just last 2 weeks ago, when Governor Pritzker changed, we started having classes on Zoom again. So we were able to have class every week and to rehearse on the weekends very safely. And we brought them in small groups. And so we were able to have a performance outside at a park through the Springfield Park District this summer. We were able to have an outdoor performance at a country club. We, you know, like I said, we have this car dealership performance, which is, you know, the best that we can do with what we've got. Even though we have a huge room that we rehearse in with great ventilation, the most important thing is, you know, being able to dance for the rest of our lives and not worry about doing it right now. So we're doing what we can. And it's been a challenge, but, you know, I think that dancers and musicians are very used to being a little bit uncomfortable, and it doesn't bother us maybe as much
yeah.
as some people.
Well, Stillian, similar question for you, and this is going to have to be our last question. We're running out of time here, but I mean, Julie mentioned that, you know, the dancers want to dance for the rest of their lives, and I know the musicians do too, but I imagine a lot of the musicians you work with, this is not a hobby. This is their career. How are you and they handling the pandemic?
Yes, it definitely hasn't been easy because, as Julie said, we want to perform. That's our life. And personally, in my case, when your hobby is your work, you don't have to work a day in your life, right? But relatively speaking. But with the pandemic, it has been difficult because we cannot perform very much for live audiences. However, I have noticed that many musicians were very proactive. You know, they continue to give to broadcasting performances. They record certain music in their home. We have been working very hard on our educational pieces. So we produce different videos with educational purposes involving the musicians, of course, teaching through Zoom as well. It's not ideal, but we just have to find ways to keep music alive and to bring music to our audiences. And these broadcasted performances are another way of doing it. So I feel we will be stronger after the pandemic because the pandemic gave us a way to reinvent ourselves and hopefully have new ideas, as hard as it has been.
We'll have to drop the curtain on our conversation there. I want to thank Maestro Stillian Kirov, Music Director of the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra, and Julie Ratz, Artistic Director of the Springfield Ballet Company, for being with us today. Thank you both. Happy holidays. Stay safe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We exit today with Waltz of the Snowflakes, the Act 1 finale, and my favorite moment from The Nutcracker. I want to remind listeners you can buy tickets for the Springfield Ballet Company's documentary, Through Clara's Eyes. There are performances scheduled through January 3rd. Tickets are $30. You can find more information at the company's website, springfieldballetco.org. And finally, there's the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra's Joy, a reimagined holiday concert featuring Duke Ellington's Nutcracker Suite. That performance will be available streaming through the end of the month. Tickets are $15 at ipomusic.org. That is all the time we have for today. Our program is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi, Brielle Skullark, and Chantel Vaca. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Morg. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey, and if you celebrate Christmas, we wish you a merry and safe holiday.